Of the agenda, action items 2.1 through 2.4, previously addressed in committee with recommendation out of the committee to the full board for approval. Is there any regent that would desire to remove a specific action item for individual discussion?
I would like to remove action items 2.5 and 2.6 for further discussion.
They were not in that consent.
Okay.
Just 2.1 through 2.4, the only consent.
I move for approval of 2.1 through 2.4.
Second.
Motion made by and second. Any further question or discussion? Move for vote approval of 2.1 through 2.4. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Note one no. Stands approved. Now, with respect, before we move on to action item 2.5, Debbie, any comment necessary now?
No, sir.
Anything further out of the region? Action item 2.5.
Who's making that presentation? We had the slides lined up, or are we just going to talk from the booklet?
John.
I think it is in booklet.
Okay. Well, we'll talk from the booklet, and I'm not, maybe a couple of you here that may not have been here for the committee meetings, and I'll reiterate the history and the circumstance. 7 years ago, the board approved a resolution to create a Greek village. In a conscious but long-term effort to get our Greek, particularly fraternities, out of the neighborhoods, the historic neighborhoods, particularly along Chestnut and State Street and College Street, and get those fraternity houses into a Greek village that would be adjacent to the evolving TIF development and what we've called Block 12 of the TIF, which is the section of the tax incremental financing district directly to the north of the campus in front of Van Meter. And we've been about that business for the last 7 years and have relocated two houses that have been finished. One is currently under construction, and the two on the agenda today, two Greek organizations on the agenda today. I won't complete that process, but I actually would deplete the available locations in that Greek village area. Now, in addition to these two, it's not on the agenda, but in addition to these two, as we discussed in committee, there are two Greek organizations, one sorority, one fraternity, that are located along Normal, that we will have to relocate because of the anticipated agency bond project to build an Honors College International Center on that site along Normal. But we will begin meeting with those two Greek organizations in the months ahead. In summary, the Pi Kappa Alpha project has two parts. One, to buy their land, and if you'll turn on your maps, if you'll turn the map over, page 50 would be 52 if these were numbered. But if you'll find the green block that says Pi Kappa Alpha, that fronts Chestnut Street, you'll see that it's adjacent to a university parking lot, a faculty staff lot at the corner of 14th and Chestnut. And we do want to buy the Pi Kappa Alpha house for the agreed to price of $200,000. And we will then use that transaction, that property, to expand that faculty staff parking lot that you see adjoining the Pi Kappa Alpha property. Then two things will occur. The owner of that house and property right now will make a $200,000 gift to the foundation, but it will be a restricted gift to the Pi Kappa Alpha fraternity that will then enable Pi Kappa Alpha fraternity to meet their financial plan to build a house on property that we will intend to sell to them, which is located on the next page. If you look at the purple spaces, future site of Greek House along Center Street, 1324 and 1328. Adjoining lots is where the Pi Kappa Alpha house will go. That fraternity is ready to close both transactions. There are separate transactions, but that fraternity is ready to close both transactions and begin construction of that house with money raised by their alumni. And we will, per the agreement going forward with Greek organizations, those properties, we sell those properties for $50,000. And in the case of Pi Kappa Alpha, would sell that for $50,000. Make no mistake that in all the transactions in Block 12 of the TIF and all the maneuvers, there's no question, and it would be hard to determine exactly what was paid for those two properties, because that was a Student Life Foundation transaction. The university came back, acquired it from the Student Life Foundation. But there are a lot of land swaps in order to create the property in Block 12 of the TIF in order for all the land to be available on both sides of Center Street. But our intent is to sell to Pi Kappa Alpha those lots for $50,000, which is the same price that the other two fraternities in the light brown, Sigma Alpha Epsilon and Sigma Nu, paid for those blocks of land as well. So these are separate items, and so you tell me whether you want to take action on 2.5, or whether you'd like for me to describe 2.6 as well, and those are, because they are separate and different transactions.
Let's move on 2.5 and approval.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Regent Zielke for approval, seconded by Regent Johnson. Any discussion?
I have a quick question. In the facts, it says that we'll sell it. Yeah, am I looking the right one? No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was looking at the wrong action item.
The only question is, are the fraternities all on one side of the street and the sororities on the other side?
No, the sororities.
That's so Animal House
later. Curiosity.
The sororities are along Chestnut Street, and I don't have a map which would show that, but the sororities were trying to locate up and down Chestnut Street in the block beyond Normal and Mimosa Alley along Chestnut Street, but I don't have that map in front of me, in front of you. But this area is restricted to a Greek village of fraternity houses that we're trying to locate around that block of Center, Alumni Avenue, College Street, and East 13th Street. And with the transactions that are proposed today, that would make a total of 9 fraternity houses in that block.
Okay. That's a good idea.
Regent Minner?
The question I had is about the budgetary implications. And I actually think the arrangement described in the last paragraph of the facts is actually pretty clever. So that's good negotiating on multiple people's parts, I see. But this is $200,000 of the University Reserve Fund, and I'd like to know what the reserve is and what the plan is for replenishing that.
The reserve is $2,634,166 as of yesterday, and that does not include an additional $1 million that's part of that reserve that was part of the distribution of the Division of Extended Learning and Outreach revenue several years ago. So the total reserve is $3,634,001.
When was that dealer distribution of $1 million made to the reserve?
I don't know, so 3 or 4 years ago. Anne?
Yes. Is that right?
I think we prepared it.
It's just part of our reserve to be held for emergency sake. The board policy is $2 million to keep a reserve of $2 million. So we have been able to exceed that amount. The backfilling practice is Anne does a terrific job of keeping a note on the side of her desk to when we spend money out of the reserve to refill it with carry forward money over time. There's not a precise time by which replenishing the reserve occurs, but it's just something that we are conscious of each budget cycle, and we've never fallen below the board policy of $2 million. But in my opinion, as the university's budget grows, the need for a larger reserve is prudent. But that reserve fund is there for, in fact, to my knowledge, over 15 years, I can think of very few times that we've drawn on the reserve for anything other than property transactions, and that's generally the use for it. But it's there in the event that we have a catastrophe of some type, a tornado, a epidemic disease, pick your tragedy, catastrophe. But that's why that reserve is in place in the event that we have to have emergency money to deal with a dramatic situation. So we felt like we've got a reasonable reserve. At one time, the board had a policy that it was a percent of the budget, and we went away from that because as our budget grew, that percent grew, and we really had a disproportionately large reserve fund when we were dealing with budget reductions and other things. But that's been our policy for, gosh, Ann, I'm going to say 10 years now maybe, of a $2 million base in the reserve. So that's, Ann provided this information just yesterday, $2.6 million, really $3.6 million. Including the DLO reserve.
Any other discussion? We have a vote.
I'm sorry. Is there usually, do you have a time frame in which you like to replenish expenditures such as this, or is this just one of those situations that you will deal with carry forward monies whenever it's available?
I remember probably 2 years ago having the capacity to take the reserve back up to $3 million plus the million. I prefer to get it a little closer to $3 million. But the 2.6 is only because you authorized some purchases this year. I'll see what happens as we're in closing right now for fiscal year 12 and gauge our ability to put money back into the university reserve in comparison to our central commitments for not one-time funding. With the budget reductions, it does put more pressure on one-time money to fund some needed items. I'll be able to tell you when we bring the audited statements back in October.
Okay.
I'll plan on telling you what the reserve is at that time.
That'll work. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Our motion is to authorize the sale of property located at 1324 and 1328 Center Street to Phi Kappa Alpha Fraternity and the subsequent purchase of 1430 Chestnut Street contingent upon fulfillment of the gift agreement. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
No vote by Region Minner. Stands approved. Moved to action item 2.6.
This one's a completely unrelated transaction, and if you'll go to the color page that shows the block, the border by Alumni Avenue, College Street, 13th and 13th Avenue and Center Street, you'll see green properties of 340 and 330 Alumni Avenue. These are two existing houses that are owned by our real estate corporation, a subset of the WKU Foundation that handles real estate transactions for the university where we want to acquire properties but we do not have immediate use. And then when it comes time for the university to have a use for those properties, we then buy them from the real estate corporation. And that's been our practice for many years. And so they hold lots of properties at the request of the university. And in many cases, generate some revenues from leases or from rentals and use that to manage the property portfolio. Phi Delta Theta Fraternity is located, okay, if you turn over and find this map right here. If you you look at that map, which shows the university district, which is the orange color shaded or colored area, and if you go down State Street, if you can find State Street, that goes in front of Thompson Complex and goes towards town, you see a little yellow house just beyond East 13th Avenue. That's the Phi Delta Theta house. And while that's not in the university district, I believe that's in the university historic, excuse me, the city historic district. College.
It's in College Hill.
College Hill District, which is the University Historic District. And that's not a good mix. And we've been trying for years to get the Phi Delta Theta fraternity out of that district and out of that house. And also keep in mind the primary motive for all of these efforts is to improve housing for Greek organizations, because these are old and tired houses and no life safety, no fire safety. We've had two fraternity house fires, Charlie, in the last dozen years or so, with near tragic consequences. And so this is a transaction with Phi Delta Theta, and you'll see the variables involved in that on page 50. So again, you go back to the second color page. The intent is for the university to buy from the real estate corporation properties at 340 and 330 Alumni Avenue, and then sell them to the Phi Delta Theta fraternity for $50,000 each for those two lots. And the reason that they're paying $100,000 is because they're buying two separate lots in order to build their fraternity house. And they understand that the deal is $50,000 a lot. And in the case of the Sigma Chi's and the Pikes, those were adjoined lots and were called one transaction. But the arrangement with Phi Delta Theta fraternity is to pay $100,000 for those two lots. And you can see the dynamics now. There is a trust involved, and we would pay $15,575 annually through 2026. And so the total loss, if you will, on this transaction over the next 14 years would be $330,000. So there is absolutely no way in the world you could ever look at this as a good business deal. It just is not. It's a loss on our books, but it fulfills the goal that this board set 7 years ago to pursue these transactions. Both Pi Kappa Alpha and Phi Delta Theta are ready to close these transactions, and they do have the money now in hand to purchase these properties, and we would affect the closings on this literally in the weeks ahead. Howard?
Yes.
Yeah.
Next week.
So we're ready to go with that, again, I cannot sit here and tell you this is a good business deal, because it will be a draw on the reserve, and we'll simply replenish that over time. This transaction is ready, and I recommend its approval.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Regent Johnson, seconded by Regent Zilke. Any discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just missed it. I don't see what happens to their existing house.
They'll sell it. They'll sell it.
Why don't we buy it?
We don't want to buy a house in that historic district. We wouldn't have a use for it. That would not, in my opinion, that would not be a good use of our funds. We could maybe turn it into rental property, but it'd have to be renovated.
Well, what assurance are you going to have that they don't sell it to another fraternity and all you do is create the same situation again?
Howard?
In our agreement with the fraternity, their interest is to, in fact, they've already had discussions with private citizens who want the house, but we would not be in agreement to allow them to do so.
Well, yeah, but
could we stipulate that maybe?
You're going to have to, well, if we don't own it, if we don't own it, we can't deed restrict it. I don't know how you...
Maybe not. Maybe we could put a stipulation in with the fraternity that
maybe,
you know,
council can think of a way of protecting.
Charlie, jump in there, guys.
There's one thing with this house. It is
able to be filled by fraternity, but it is not in the university district. It was there before the university district.
Correct.
Was there, so it's grandfathered in. If this fraternity leaves, it cannot be taken place by another student organization because it would lose its zoning because it's not in the district. So for them, whoever they sell it to cannot be another fraternity or sorority.
Yeah, I don't know if I would agree. David may know it too. I think you could stack. If there's a grandfathered location under zoning and a continuing use is the same, it may be permissible. I mean, I'm not a zoning lawyer, David.
It's not written that way. The College Hill
Historic District. It depends on what the zoning ordinance is, I think.
The College Hill Historic District, the ordinance is written that that was not in the University District. Huh. There's no grandfathering whatsoever. The property that used to belong to Sigma Nu, which is now the Phi Gamma Delta House, was in the University District, grandfathered in when College Hill was created. But Phi Delta Theta is in College Hill, which simply means that it can't be taken down. The facade cannot be significantly altered without getting approval from a Historic Preservation Board, which that's President Ransel is exactly right, that part of the purpose of moving these houses out is that it's not the world's greatest fit. It's not the world's greatest fit, and, you know, better to move them into the University District where there are not such restrictions. And if you can, if Phi Delta can get a good business deal for their house, then more power to them.
Okay.
But it's a privately owned housing corporation, if I'm not mistaken. So owned by your local.
We would do our best to keep that circumstance from happening, and Charlie's got pretty good leverage over most of the fraternities.
It would not be in their best interest.
Fair enough.
I had another question. The trust assumption on our part. What? Right. Explain how that came about to us, if you could.
John.
What?
The trust assumption on the acquisition of the two properties along Alumni Avenue.
When the Real Estate Foundation, on our behalf, approaches potential sellers, it's oftentimes the best arrangement if the property is put into a trust for them, and we've got arrangements that allow that to happen, and it's a win-win when that happens. So where and when possible, we put properties into trust in order to get it into the foundation, into the Real Estate Foundation. So in this case, we simply assume the trust instead of a mortgage.
And we'd rather pay $15,000 a year over 14 years than pay all of that sum up front now. I mean, that's the more prudent use of money.
That depends on how big the mortgage is, your interest rate.
Well, and John, you all may know more of the
details.
They didn't
do one in this case.
They did that?
No.
It's zero interest?
No, the rate, I believe, by the trust is, I don't know. I'll be honest with you.
Who are the people who hold the trust currently? I mean, what entity or what individual?
Yeah, the WKU Foundation.
Foundation is
the
trust. So we're, in essence, paying ourselves.
Well,
I'm a little confused on this.
We don't own it. For the university to sell it to Phi Delta Theta, we've got to acquire the property from the Real Estate Corporation, which is an independent unit, so that we can consummate the transaction with Phi Delta Theta. So the Real Estate Foundation, to their credit, would not sell a piece of property and take a loss on it like that.
So we're paying them the $15,000. That's all I need to know.
Yes.
Thank you.
Now, I think the other part I guess I would make here is that when they do that, and if they hold it for a period of time, the rental income and any other income it generates while it's in their possession reduces the trust and or mortgage, and then when we acquire it, we only acquire it for the remaining balance. So the benefit of this arrangement is that they're able to take the property off the market at a rate, that, you know, at today's rate, so to speak, when they buy it, and then we are able to acquire it at a future date at only what is left on the balance at that time. And in the meantime, it is not a state facility, which is another beneficial arrangement. In other words, had the university bought it, it would have become a state building, and that brings automatic requirements related to codes and so forth that we're not able to jump into. So it's a good arrangement that in the meantime it is held in a separate 501(c) from the university, and then when we later acquire it, we pay them for the property.
Great arrangement.
Question for Dr. Pride, can answer this one. So what is the what is the plan for these two properties? Vice President Bailey had outlined a couple of ideas for the two properties that were in play a month ago. Do we know what the plan is? Renovate, take down?
That is still in one of the properties, which is that one of the properties will be taken down no matter what. That's the duplex. The other one is the historic house that's looking at. Right now, they're getting the structural engineers and stuff to look and see if it can be saved. There's a lot of like, I think their first thing would be to try to look at safety, if not taking it down and putting a smaller facility than some of the ones we have on the property.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
Gary, what's this other little? What is that other property?
That's
this is the one where the one I circled at the bottom one.
Yes.
But there's another kind of isolated yellow piece of property
on College Street.
What
that
is that?
That is the current Sigma Chi house.
It's the former Sigma Chi house.
Well, but I mean they're under construction with a new house.
Oh, okay.
But that's where their house has been.
Same situation.
Same
they're going to sell it privately.
We didn't want that one.
Okay. Okay.
They're trying to sell it. Or have they sold it?
They will be opening.
But have they sold their former property?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So this
one.
Correct.
Okay, I got you.
Larry, this map is a couple years old from our campus physical plant master plan. So this.
And this just occurred in the past few months.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the city ought to be very happy with the university cleaning up these properties.
I think so.
Yeah.
This picture here, Sigma Chi, is that the old Sigma Chi house?
No.
That's the new one.
That's the one that's under construction.
That is the one under construction. No. On Center Street.
No, this is the house under construction that they will move into.
This is where they're going
to fall semester.
Okay.
That picture is about a month old.
Oh, okay.
Any other discussion?
I would just add that, again, it is consistent with the vision that the board laid out. In these difficult financial times, it's difficult to justify this kind of even small drawdowns of the reserve for something that doesn't have it's not a affect 21,000 students issue. And that does give me pause, even though as a former national officer of a Greek organization, I'm completely sympathetic to all of the goals that are here. But this is, we're drawing down reserve money on a deal. Does not have a larger utilitarian purpose.
Any other discussion? Call the vote to approve a motion to authorize the purchase and subsequent sale of property located at 330 and 340 Alumni Avenue to Phi Delta Fraternity. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, no.
No.
No motion, no vote noted.
Now you're 3-3.
So approved. Next action item is 2.7.
Captain, would you like to speak to this?
Debbie.
We'll be hearing a report later. We're completing the second campaign for the university. Don Vitale chaired both campaigns.
Can you speak in a microphone or something, Gary?
Gary? Provide leadership. And Rick Gilliam helped.
Speak a little bit louder.
Can you?
Can't hear you.
Could you?
Sorry, I feel as if I'm yelling at you.
Okay.
We are finishing the second campaign, a very historic one for the university, and Don Vitale has chaired both the university's campaigns since Gary Ransdell became president. Rick Gilliam has co-chaired this most recent campaign, which is a $200 million effort. And I thought that both of them should be acknowledged by the Board of Regents for their service, which has been wonderful and very effective. And so the resolutions are in recognition of what they've done for the university as a result of chairing this most recent campaign, and in Don's case, chairing two.
Yeah, it's hard for me to describe how this campaign came to an end on June 30, quietly, successfully. But I just have to, and we will be able to do this when we celebrate the victory of this campaign on September 21. But this campaign was announced publicly in September of 2008. The same time that we introduced the strategic plan that we discussed yesterday, but that really went by the wayside just because of a recessionary environment. But we didn't pause on a $200 million capital campaign. We marched forward and over the course of the last 4 years achieved a goal of $200 million in this economy. And I can't tell you how many universities pushed the pause button, backed off campaign plans, canceled plans, for any number of reasons, part of the most of which was the lack of confidence that they could do it. We marched forward, we did it. John Paul's here. And we did it in the absence of a major transformational lead gift of $15 or $20 million. Now the Jerry Baker gift was huge for us, but most of the really large gifts were achieved in our first campaign of $100 million that we completed in 2003. So for the challenge of this board in 1997 to organize us to conduct our first capital campaign and create a culture of philanthropy within this university where we had none. We had never had a $1 million gift prior to 1997. And for us to complete a $200 million capital campaign in this environment is something that I hope this board takes great pride in. And it goes, I mean, this resolution is absolutely in order for Don Vitale and Rick Gilliam. And as Catherine said, Don Vitale chaired that first campaign. But for this to be achieved and for us to continue to march forward, Donald Smith, with our annual fund continuing to grow and was an important part of this campaign, because this campaign was achieved on the basis of a significant number of 5 and 6 and a few 7-figure gifts, but not the really big ones that a campaign of $200 million plus typically have. Great perseverance, determination, resolve, and generosity on the part of our alumni and friends who made the gifts to make it possible. And make no mistake, that $200 million goal was met, and we'll announce that final figure on September 21. And it will be a very important moment in the history of this university as we have pursued this transformation. And the philanthropic environment that we've been able to create and sustain is a major part of that transformation. And there was a time when a $1 million gift was front page news in Bowling Green, Kentucky. We get a $1 million gift these days, and we're lucky to mention it for a couple sentences on page 7 these days because it's expected. And it's not news anymore, but that's also something that we have to feel pretty good about. So this resolution is important because these two gentlemen and all the volunteers need to understand that their volunteerism and their leadership is appreciated. So I just had to reinforce the significance of this moment in time in our history.
And move approval of the two resolutions.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Any other discussion? All in favor?
My only discussion is, should you do more? Should you create, for example, the Distinguished Spirit Master Award for Mr. Vitale and Rick Gilliam? I know them both, and they've done, like you said, outstanding. The resolution is great. But should there be an award?
That's an interesting.
I'm just thinking out loud.
We will create. Donald can describe that we are going to create in the Augustine Alumni Center, which in and of itself was a $1 million gift from Dell Augustine to name that alumni center. But we are going to create a donor recognition. Donald, pick it up here.
Yeah, correct. And we'll talk a little bit about the Augustine Alumni Center here in a little bit, but inside the atrium there we'll have donor recognition walls that talk about the impact of the entire campaign, and there's a courtyard right outside of that all the donors that have given $25,000 or more will be recognized, and of course the campaign cabinet with those two individuals will be listed prominently. And they both are actually recipients of what we call the Distinguished Service Medal as well, which is something that we give out at Summit Awards each year, which is a Thursday night before homecoming, where we recognize the top 3 volunteers each year for the university. And both of those gentlemen are past recipients of that as well.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. unanimous approval. One other item, Mr. President, you want to, for, as a result of our retreat yesterday, we want to get one other item into our minutes.
Yes. As a Board of Regents, you cannot help but be aware of all that has unfolded in recent days, recent weeks, the last few months, involving Pennsylvania State University. Particularly in follow-up to the free report that was issued just last week that went into great detail and had significant implications beyond the transgressions of one individual in the form of a football coach. And it involved the university administration. It involved the board of trustees of Penn State University. It involved their president, a vice president, and an athletic director, and who knows who else by the time all is said and done, by the time litigation occurs. So I've asked Deborah Wilkins, our general counsel, to assess the free report and to identify any area, any of our protocols, any of our procedures, our compliance with the Clery Act that does require reporting of crimes, large or small, and how secure are we, how compliant are we, and what might need attention in the future in order to assure this board of our strengths and weaknesses in that regard going forward. And Deborah is doing that, and at our next board meeting, Mr. Chair, we will have a report for the board in that regard that we will share with you at that time. And in the meantime, Larry was not at our discussion yesterday, but the board places a lot of trust in me to ensure that I become aware, and once I become aware, that we act properly. And I'm completely accountable to this board if we don't. And that's the bottom line of where we are. But I will say that I'm confident that what we find will be positive, good, and give you a sense of confidence. But I'm also confident we'll find some things that we might need to tweak.
Well, in that regard, should this be a confidential attorney-client communication?
I don't think it will get into, because I've done a little preliminary checking, and I think what we'll find is that we are compliant, but that we could do some things to improve it, maybe add to it. We're, of course, a lot smaller than Penn State, and they had multiple campuses, and which served to be problematic for them. But I'm comfortable doing it this way.
I'm going to have enough confidence that it's going to be something that we're comfortable being completely open and forthright about. And if not, we'll get back to you.
I'm not sure David, Larry, and Deborah. David, Larry, and Deborah are far more aware of than most of us would be. But part of all this, when you get into legal ramifications, is did somebody create an environment where these things could occur and continue without being addressed. Mm-hmm. And that's where they really dropped the ball. Sure. The incidents themselves, they probably possibly couldn't have prevented those initial incidents, but it was, quote, the cover-up or the lack of addressing those issues. And when the EEOC comes in, that's the first thing they go after. Did you create an environment where this could happen? And obviously, we're not going to do that.
If not create, allow something unfortunate to continue.
Right.
Yeah, well, you can create it by not having the policies in place and having a line of chain of command to report to. And
if you look at the history of great political scandals, it's always the cover-up that brings somebody down. I mean, it's the cover-up. And the protection, the belief that protection of the brand was more important than complying with local criminal and state federal law is the tragic flaw here that has led to great personal tragedy, and I think this is absolutely the right way for us to go.
Sure. Well, since Chairman Hignett has taken over, I see these internal audit reports that we, which I think is a fine thing. It goes through in great detail and asks all the regents if there's any something that needs to be fouled up. So it does put the ball in our corner to investigate when we think there should be some investigation. But that reporting is just a marvelous tool right now.
You're right. And in that regard, I would share with you that the study of our internal auditing function is nearly complete. Bailey Jordan is with us from Grant Thornton, and we'll be communicating with the chair and the vice chair and me going forward, and we'll have a final report in the next few weeks regarding our internal auditing functions, and we will share that with the board as well.
Make one comment quickly, following up on Mr. Johnson's comments. In the 17 years that I've been here, my philosophy, and I think everyone would agree with this, has always been when I meet with people, if there's a problem or a mistake, we'll correct it. We're all human. We're going to make them. And so I encourage people to be open with me, and I'm open with them. I carry that over, right or wrong, to our compliant agencies, EEOC, OCR. If we've done something wrong, I tell them when they call us. And I'll say, this is what we've done to address it and fix it. And so far, knock on wood, we've had good experience. And so that's my philosophy. I agree with Patty 110%. The cover-up is the problem. And if we're going to make mistakes. That's going to happen. I'm going to make them. We're all going to make them at some point during our career. And my job is to work with the university and the individuals involved, straighten it out, beg for forgiveness, do what we have to do, and move forward.
You know, if I could make one suggestion, it's somewhere in whatever letters that go out and so forth addressing this, that if you have, if any member of the staff, faculty, have a issue or become aware of something that's happening that shouldn't happen on campus, that you have a designated reporting thing, one, and not just a person, but somebody, y'all from three or four alternates, so they feel comfortable going to at least one of these people.
Yeah. And we have, as you said, and you've been told, an ombudsman. We have several mechanisms on campus now for people to report anonymously. So I'll bring all that information together for you.
Because having somebody designated as a person to report to becomes very, very important. And you can't limit that to one or two people. It needs to be several so that they can't say, I didn't feel comfortable going to Deborah.
Right, right.
But then they've got an alternate if they don't feel comfortable going to Deborah.
Well, in spite of my unofficial titles for our legal, financial, and governmental officials of gloom, doom, and despair, they all three are absolutely aware that if at any time there's a circumstance that they become aware of, they need to inform me, and if for whatever reason I'm preoccupied and it doesn't get my attention, sit me down, slap me around, make sure that I understand, and then recommend a solution, and if I fail to take action, then I do so at my own peril.
But well, the initial person that would be reported to might be her and, say, 300 designated people. If they feel like that after having gone to those folks, the issue wasn't resolved, then they could come to you directly, but only after they've gone to them previously. Well, you don't want to take all of these.
Well, bad situations come to our attention in lots of ways, but you're right. There's typically a process, but I just want this board to know that you can have confidence that we would act and will act, and if we fail to, then I'm accountable to this board.
Thanks. We're going to take a 5-minute break.